Welcome to News Talk, and this is D.G. Martin. Who's the most controversial figure in North Carolina politics ever? Could it be Jesse Helms? Well, it might be Jesse Helms. And people in North Carolina are having the opportunity right now, because of the work of a Chapel Hill resident, to see Jesse Helms as we have never seen him before. John Wilson's film about a biography of Jesse Helms is playing on UNC TV almost as we speak. And John Wilson from Chapel Hill has agreed to come and tell us about what went into the making of this wonderful film. John Wilson, you look relieved. Have you got a burden off your back?
Well, I'm pleased to be able to show the documentary to people. A lot of hard work has gone into this film by a lot of people, and it's nice to have it seeing the light of day. And
what do you call it? What do you call it?
Senator No Jesse Helms. 9 o'clock tomorrow night, Tuesday night, on UNC TV.
Well, we're looking forward to it, and as I mentioned to John earlier, this Senator No, which is airing on UNC TV tomorrow night, will be aired again and again, and we will air this program again and again as it coincides with the airing on UNC TV. John, you've had a premiere showing, an early showing of the film, and I'm sure that you've had several times that you've shown it as it's completed. What's been the reaction so far to the film?
I've been so pleased with the reaction from all political persuasions, people who I know are very conservative and who I know are very liberal, and everywhere in between, have been responding that they found the film engaging and fair and told them things about Helms that they never knew. And some people are saying the film is telling them things that they didn't really want to know. But they're watching it from beginning to end, and they can't believe after 87 minutes that it was really 87 minutes long. It moves along, so don't blink. But that was really the goal from the outset with this film, was to make something that would hold people's attention and not in the first 15 or 30 seconds reveal itself to be a hatchet job or a tribute, because people, that's really not what they're looking for in public television. They're looking for objective, compelling programming, and that was our goal. And, you know, you never know. You sort of lose perspective in a project of this magnitude regarding whether you're achieving that goal. But the response thus far has been that we have. And it's holding people's interest regardless of their prior feelings about Helms or their knowledge about Helms. It seems to be holding their interest from beginning to end, and they come away from it having been challenged and having thought a lot, and it's provoking some very interesting discussion afterwards.
You're well known for a number of really wonderful films that you've done before. My favorite, I think, is Dr. Frank, The Life and Times of Frank Porter Graham, which people in Chapel Hill who've seen it tend to love and to respect. How did Frank Porter Graham lead you to Jesse Helms?
Right. I made a film about Frank Graham. It's called Dr. Frank, The Life and Times of Frank Porter Graham, that Charles Kuralt narrated in the mid-90s. And part of Frank Graham's story, of course, is that infamous 1950 Senate race. And young Jesse Helms, then a radio broadcaster on WRAL-FM in Raleigh, was a supporter of Willis Smith's, who was challenging Frank Graham. And there was a lot of controversy about whether Helms had a role in any of the really sort of racially motivated political tactics that were used in defeating Frank Graham. And we contacted Senator Helms and asked him if he would grant an interview for the documentary on Dr. Frank. And initially he agreed, and then he later changed his mind and said, "I'm sure you're planning to be objective, but a lot of people have told me the same thing in the past, only to lie through their teeth." So he declined, and of course I found that very interesting. And Senator Helms, through a third party, got in touch with me after the Frank Graham film was broadcast and said that he enjoyed the film very much. And I sent a message back through this person that would Senator Helms allow me to come in and talk with him about making a film on him. And a couple weeks later, he called back and said, Senator Helms says call his office and line it up. And so I went in. This was probably mid-1995, and talked with Helms for over an hour. And at the end of it, he said, well, I don't know why you'd want to, but if you choose to make a film on me, I'll cooperate with you as best I can. And so we did.
Wow. I mean, you know, this is... I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is just such a great story because it's a lesson in terms of something didn't work, a disappointment, you kind of get mad at somebody, and then it comes back and opens a door.
It's exactly what happened.
What did you do with that open door, and how did you turn that into a film? Because you can't just go out and take your camera and make the film.
Right, right. So when Helms, you know, I was shocked, frankly, because Helms has never let a filmmaker get anywhere near him, and was reluctant with historians, and very suspicious of the press. Even though he, of course, is a former journalist, he has had a infamous relationship with the media. So I was really surprised and delighted, and so we began by doing a great deal of research. And having Helms's permission, I'm not going to say blessing, but having his permission really opened a lot of doors. And he wrote a letter that I was able to show to people who might have otherwise been suspicious. You know, who are you? What are you doing? But he wrote a letter saying, again, I don't know why you'd want to, but if you want to make a film on me, you can. And so that enabled me to, you know, get in touch with people like Tom Ellis at the Congressional Club and Jerry Falwell and others who might have otherwise said, who are you? You know, are you from public television or National Public Radio, you know, liberal media? And so we got a lot of access because we had Helms, you know, green light. And I think it came at a time when Helms's family may have been saying, Dad or Granddad or Jesse, you ought to be thinking a little more about your legacy. I don't know that for a fact, but I kind of got that sense that there was the beginning, that we may have caught him at the right time in terms of, it may have just been, you know, fortunate circumstances.
Well, what did you have to give up to get that blessing? I mean, maybe that's not a fair question, but it's got to be the question that everybody asks is, you have to make these compromises sometime to get in the door, but can you say, I made no compromises?
Absolutely. There were no strings attached from Senator Helms or his family or his staff, both his personal staff in his Senate office and the Foreign Relations Committee. The Jesse Helms Center down in Wingate, which is the amazing archive of all of Senator Helms's records and you know, photographs, etc. No undue influence, no attempts to influence the direction of the documentary or the content of the documentary. So we really didn't give up anything. And we had tremendous access. When, you know, during his 96 rematch with Harvey Gantt, when I let people know that, you know, I'm the fella making the documentary, I got to go behind the scenes. I got to ride on his campaign train as he did a whistle stop tour. I got access to Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearings. They really cooperated fully and never attempted to influence the direction of the documentary. And I wouldn't have, that's just not the way I work, and I wouldn't have been able to make this film. I wouldn't have made this film if there had been that attempt.
Well, you gotta have, when you're granted this kind of access, and the people who are the subjects of your inquiry begin to wrap their arms around you and say you're okay, you're part of the family, you got to start feeling like you're part of the family, and that when the time comes to put the balance on the what would you say on the Andy Helms side? You say, well, I've got to be careful about doing this. You lose the righteous anger. Does that make you more objective, maybe?
That's a great question, DG. And that was something that I and those that I was working with on this project constantly reminded ourselves of, is that we've got to keep this balanced. It's got to be as objective as possible. In writing all the narration that I wrote, I made every effort to make sure that the narration never editorialized. We can allow those who we interview on camera and put in the film to express their opinions, and that's why we selected people who either told stories that they directly were involved in, you know, history that they were part of making, or people whose opinions we really respected on both the pro and anti-Helms side. So your question, back to your question, yes, spending time with Senator Helms, who is very personally charming, one-on-one, and his staff is so accommodating. But you know, that's part of the story also, that side of Jesse Helms, that one-on-one, that constituent services. I mean, caring enough about people who contact his office to respond to their mail personally, or to drop everything and get Granny's Social Security check. It's, you know, Rob Christensen of the News and Observer tells a great story, which is when you can get Granny's Social Security check, or, you know, get that passport quick, has a lot of influence, and it was part of Helms's appeal. So, you know, it's a long answer to your question, but
no, it's a good answer.
We always had to remind ourselves of that balance. That was the number one biggest struggle, or challenge, I should say, in the entire documentary.
Well, I'm talking to John Wilson, and we're, of course, talking about his film, Senator No, which is the account of Jesse Helms' life and service, and broadcast on UNC TV. John Wilson, I'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is John Wilson. John Wilson is a Chapel Hill filmmaker, Chapel Hill based, resident of Chapel Hill, and an important American filmmaker whose latest project is Senator No, which is being broadcast Tuesday, January 15th for the first time on UNC TV, and will be broadcast many other times. If you're listening to this program after the original broadcast, watch it on one of the repeats, or you can go to the UNC TV website, unctv.org/senator-no/film/index. But anyway, you can get there if you go to the UNC TV, and there is a wealth, John, of background material, and you can see a considerable part of the film about on the website.
Right. And again, the website is unctv.org/senator-no.
So that's all, that's all you need to do to get there.
unctv.org/senator-no.
Well, we'll have a link on our website to that, to the UNC TV website, if you have any trouble getting there at all. On the website, John, you've got a list of and pictures and photos of the principal people whom you interviewed for this documentary film. And can you tell us about the ones, I can throw the names out and you can react, but can you tell us about the people that you selected and why you selected them and what you got from them?
Sure. One of the first things we wanted to do was to get in touch with people who were directly a part of Helms' story. Of course, Helms himself sat for two separate interviews. Mrs. Helms sat for an interview and sat alongside Senator Helms. We did an interview with her individually and also with the two of them side by side. Carter Wren and Tom Ellis of the Congressional Club.
Now tell us about Tom Ellis and Carter Wren and how they fit in and how the complexities of their changing relationship with each other and with Senator Helms had an impact on your work?
Sure, that's a big question. I'll try to be as brief as I can. But Helms and Ellis got to know each other back around the time of the 1950 U.S. Senate race when Ellis was a young researcher for Willa Smith, who was challenging Frank Graham, and Jesse Helms was a broadcaster on WREL radio in Raleigh. And I think they both learned a good deal from that race. In the closing moments of that race, there was some pretty heated stuff, both on the communism allegations of being communist sympathizers, and also a lot of racial issues came up.
And, you know, John, I'd hate to, I mean, this is your program, but the 1950 Senate race between Frank Graham and Willa Smith, in my judgment, is sort of like the big bang of North Carolina politics. That at that moment, there was this big explosion, and everything that's happened since is sort of came out of that race, including this story that you're telling about Jesse Helms, and then, which a lot of people know, but now what you're telling us more about is that Tom Ellis was a part of that, and never out front, but an important part of who Jesse Helms is.
That's right, yeah.
And you got him on camera.
Right. Watershed is an understatement for the 1950 Senate race. But yeah, so Helms and Ellis got to know each other then. They saw some political tactics firsthand that worked in that 1950 race. And so as Helms was making a name for himself from 1960 to 72 with those controversial viewpoint editorials on WREL-TV, conservatives from both political parties started to get in touch with Helms and encourage him to run for public office. And Tom Ellis, who Helms knew before, really had the inside track. And Helms became a Republican in 1970 and ran as a Republican in 1972. And again, there were some interesting tactics used in that Senate race in 1972 against Nick Galifianakis. And so shortly after...
Are you saying, we're talking about Tom Ellis now and his connection with Jesse Helms, that Tom Ellis was sort of the creative genius behind the tactics that began to develop in the 1950s, Smith, Willa Smith, Frank Graham race, and that Tom Ellis was sort of teaching Jesse how to do this, or was it a partnership, or how did it work?
I wouldn't say teaching. I'd say it was very much a partnership, and they were able in 1972 to, you know, despite the fact that the registration was 4-1 Democrat in 1972, Jesse Helms is elected to the U.S. Senate, Tom Ellis was, a lot of people have referred to him as a political genius. And then shortly after that 72 race, in order to retire Helms' $160,000 campaign debt, Tom Ellis creates what became one of the most important political action committees in American history, called the Congressional Club. And they really took this direct mail technique, which was in its infancy, and using Jesse Helms's ability to push hot button issues, particularly social issues, abortion, pornography, gun control, busing, etc., they were able to start sending out direct mail, and over the next 20 years raised close to $100 million. And Tom Ellis and the Congressional Club and Jesse Helms, they saved Ronald Reagan's political life in 1976.
Is Carter Wren a player in this, and how does he fit in with Tom Ellis and Jesse Helms? What part does he play? What does he contribute to the Congressional Club in that effort?
Sure. Carter Wren was a young volunteer for Helms' 1972 Senate race. He was fresh out of UNC Chapel Hill. And Ellis saw something in Carter Wren, unique, skills and talents, and brought him into this organization that became the Congressional Club. And Carter Wren became director of the Congressional Club in 74 or 75. And, you know, again, the Congressional Club had a huge impact on the 76
Republican. Is it fair to say that what he did was that he brought a young person's perspective in bringing an awareness and an openness to the more modern techniques, and that Helms and Tom Ellis brought this sort of wisdom, political wisdom, and that that partnership exploded into something more than the rest of them?
That's a fair assumption. I think, you know, clearly Ellis and Helms were guys with experience dating back as far as 1950, and were a generation and maybe a generation and a half ahead of Carter Wren in age. And I think coming out of that sort of young Republican background that he had, he did bring certainly a different.
As you point out in the film, and as you told us today, that partnership resulted in an incredible success in terms of political fundraising. Your film also points out and shows that the partnership broke down. But I'm not sure I understood from the film why. Do you know why that partnership broke out? And if you do, tell us.
Sure. Helms, you know, they raised $8 million for him in 78. They got John East elected in 1980. They were huge in the Helms-Hunt race in 84. In 90, Helms is elected again over Harvey Gantt. Of course, there was that infamous White Hands ad about racial hiring quotas. And then Locke Faircloth was elected, beat Terry Sanford in 1982.
And did the Congressional Club help? I'll just call it the partnership help Locke significantly?
Yes,
on that
they
victory
did.
Over Sanford.
So in the end, the Congressional Club elected three U.S. senators. You know, Jesse Helms five times, John East in 1980 once, and then Locke Faircloth once in 1992. But in 94, Faircloth was first to split with the Congressional Club. He had issues regarding, you know, how money was being raised or how money was being spent. And then later in 94, Helms splits with the club. Now, the public...
What is that? What do you mean split?
Abruptly parted ways
and
with
why?
The Congressional Club. Well, what Helms tells us on camera, and as far as he was willing to go in his explanation to us, was that he sort of like Faircloth felt like there was some improper fundraising tactics, maybe letters going out that he didn't necessarily approve of, that money was not going, not enough of the money was going to the candidate for whom it was being raised. That was what he said publicly. Now, I heard that there was a private story as well. Helms wouldn't tell it on camera. And the more I learned about the private story, there was a dispute about one of Helms' daughters taught at a private school in Raleigh that Tom Ellis and Carter Wren both served on the board of. And there was a dispute between the daughter and the head of that school. And Helms expected Ellis and Wren to automatically side with his daughter in that dispute. They couldn't or wouldn't or whatever, and Jesse Helms abruptly went the other way. Now, I never could get to the bottom of that, and the more I tried to get to the bottom of that, the more I realized, you know, I'm not interested in devoting the screen time to that, because it may take 2 or 3 or 7 minutes of screen time and ultimately come out sounding kind of petty. And also, I can't verify it. And the one thing I tried to do in this film was only include things that I personally could and had verified.
Where did that leave the relationship? We understand, I guess, that left Carter Wren completely out. What did that do to the relationship between Helms and Tom Ellis?
It was, I think the relationship between Helms and Carter Wren became totally frosty, and I would doubt that they have ever even spoken to each other since. They may have, but I don't know that they have. But I think Ellis really was genuinely sad about, and Carter Wren may have been also, but Ellis was willing to say it on camera that, you know, I really regret that this happened because, you know, here was this, in his opinion,
the friendship of his life or the partnership of his life.
Yeah, and also what he said, you know, here was this congressional club that was this force for conservatism, and, you know, now it's gone. And so, but you could tell as he said that he was genuinely personally sad. He would never say anything disparaging of Helms. Not that I was trying to get him to say anything disparaging about Helms, but you could tell he doesn't have anything disparaging to say about Helms.
But never are they in touch with each other?
I doubt it now, just because Helms' health is not good. But I think they've had limited contact since that happened in '94, and I think it's been cordial, but certainly nothing like it.
Never the same partnership. Well, yeah. What an interesting story. We got to take a break, though. I'm talking to John Wilson, and we're visiting on the occasion of the release and showing on UNC-TV of John Wilson's film called Senator No. It's an account of Jesse Helms' life in his political career. John Wilson and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm visiting with John Wilson, the Chapel Hill-based filmmaker, whose latest film is Senator No. It's an account of the life of Jesse Helms, and it is being broadcast for the first time on at Tuesday, January 15th. At what time, John?
9 p.m.
9 p.m.
Right after Nova.
On UNC-TV, and will be broadcast over and over again. And John, as we pointed out earlier, this will be kind of a living presentation, and if you're listening to the program after the premiere, you'll be able to see it again on numerous repeats, we think, on UNC-TV. And there's a website that you can go to get a lot of the information that we're talking about, unctv.org/SenatorNo. John Wilson, I've asked you to talk about some of the people that you recruited to go on camera to talk about Jesse Helms, and you're busting to tell us about Bono because he's the celeb that nobody can believe that you recruited to go on camera to visit about Senator Helms. Or if we can get over the fact that we can't believe that Bono and Senator Helms became partners in a venture.
Yeah, and that's I think the
and in Chapel Hill, you might have to explain who Bono is.
Sure. Bono, the leader of the rock band U2 and political and social activist, is really an interesting part of the story. And as I began making this film in 95 and 96, you know, Jesse Helms' story, there wasn't a whole lot of change early in this project. Helms was a pretty linear story, didn't change much on the race issue, didn't change much on foreign relations, didn't change at all on, you know, bashing homosexuals. And what made Bono such an interesting part of the story is that in, 2000-2001, Bono approaches Jesse Helms, then chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and requests a meeting to talk about international AIDS relief funding, particularly for Africa, and also forgiveness of third world debt. And Helms initially was like, why do I want to meet with this guy Bono? You know, is that Sonny Bono? And but he met with Bono, and in that meeting, Bono appealed to Helms through, as he referred to it, the lens of the scriptures. And he pointed out to Helms that there are so many passages of the Bible pertaining to how we treat the poor. And, you know, that Christ only talks about judgment once, and it has nothing to do with the usual sort of shock, horror, you know, conservative, you know, attack points. And that Helms was visibly moved. Bono said, you know, there are people dying by the millions in Africa, because we can't get them drugs that you and I can get at the corner drugstore. And he said that Helms was visibly upset, and then went on to push an appropriation of $500 million and to say publicly that he was ashamed of how he had previously thought about the AIDS pandemic. And that just was really powerful. I mean, sure, it was wonderful to meet Bono and to interview Bono, and I would be, you know, not being truthful if I didn't say I was somewhat starstruck, but much more importantly was just that it was an amazing part of the story. Now, something important to point out is that we don't just say, okay, then Jesse Helms completely reversed his position on AIDS, you know, the end. We point out that, in fact, that's not what Helms did. We interview a woman named Patsy Clark who lost a son to AIDS and then formed with another woman an organization called Mothers Against Jesse in Congress to oppose Helms in 1996 for his reelection. Patsy Clark points out on camera that Helms made it very clear when reporters came to him after the Bono encounter and Helms's apparent change, at least on international AIDS, he made it very clear that he had not changed his views about homosexuals with AIDS, that their irresponsible behavior, in his opinion, was the main reason why AIDS had spread, particularly in the United States. So he did not extend his compassion, Clark says, to homosexuals. So it's a shade of gray. It's not a black and white.
Wasn't the Damascus Road experience that completely transformed him, but it was, John, this in the film, as I saw it, it was a transformative moment. It was I think you said, this is a great thing for a filmmaker where you've got something that gets us off track a little bit, that shows a side that you wouldn't have predicted.
Yeah, and you know, he did what he did, and people can say, well, that was, you know, sort of last minute image polishing for the history books, or more importantly, for meeting his maker. And Helms himself wrote an editorial that Bono reads at the end of the film, where Helms even acknowledges, perhaps I'm too aware of the fact that I'm about to meet my maker. But he did do what he did. Now, is that enough? I don't know. And I don't attempt to pass judgment on that. Does it change anything that he did previously? No. And I think the film makes clear, in Helms' own words, exactly where he stood on the race issue, exactly what he said about homosexuals, exactly what he said about, you know, diplomacy, et cetera.
Well, Jesse Helms probably wouldn't back away from any of that. I mean, that one of the main themes of the story, that the change is maybe not the main theme of the story. The main theme of the story may be consistency in terms of having a viewpoint, whether you agreed with him or not, and then sticking with it. Others, now here I go preaching, but I mean, that seemed to be the theme, the surprising thing that people said, I don't agree with Jesse, but I know where he stands.
Right.
That your film sort of confirms that feature of Jesse Helms.
And you know, in most ways, Helms was entirely consistent. And you know, at the end of the film, we point out, you know, he never met a civil rights bill that he liked, never had any sort of change of heart like George Wallace or Strom Thurmond about the race issue. But he did have, in some ways, a transformation on the international AIDS relief. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, when it became known to him that heterosexual women in Africa are contracting this disease and passing it to their unborn children, that certainly seemed to have caught Helms's attention. And the fact that he did not seem to have similar sympathy for homosexuals who contracted AIDS is not my place to judge. But you know, we do point that out in the film. So in some ways he changed, and in some ways he was consistent.
Well, we've got to take a break. John Wilson, who is the Chapel Hill-based filmmaker, whose latest film, Senator No, is being currently broadcast on UNC-TV. John Wilson, I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. John Wilson from our friend in Chapel Hill is also a well-known filmmaker. And he's got a lot of great films that he's made in the past. What might be his greatest is Senator No, the film about Jesse Helms, which UNCTV is broadcasting. And John, we're grateful to you for spending some time talking about the inside of it. You've been telling us about some of the people that you recruited from kind of all sides to talk about Jesse Helms, people who either knew him well or who had thought about him a lot. And one of those was one of the most surprising staff members that Jesse Helms ever had, a guy named Claude Allen, who's a brilliant African-American who served under Jesse Helms when Jesse Helms was running, I guess, against Jim Hunt in the 1984 Senate race. And you had Claude Allen on camera. First of all, why did you go after him just because he was black and that Jesse Helms was known as pretty strong on the race issue?
The main reason I wanted to talk with Claude Allen was because I knew firsthand about his interaction with Helms regarding Helms's opposition to the Martin Luther King holiday in 1983. And let me explain how I knew that firsthand. Claude Allen was a fraternity brother of mine at UNC Chapel Hill.
Wow.
At Chi Psi Fraternity. And I will never forget the day that he came in and said that he was becoming Jesse Helms's campaign press secretary. And, I was very interested in the 1984 Helms Hunt Senate race and then the 1990 race with Harvey Gantt. But when I started making this film on Helms, I always hoped to interview Claude because I knew that it had affected him personally, the Martin Luther King.
That he was working for Helms, loved him, but disagreed with him about the King holiday.
That's right, and took a lot of heat from a lot of people about, you know, how can you work for Jesse Helms when he's opposing the Martin Luther King holiday. And so when I got in touch with Claude, he was up for a federal judgeship. Prior to him being appointed by President Bush, nominated by President Bush to be federal judge, he had said, yes, I'd be happy to do the interview. And then once he had been appointed and it was becoming heated in the U.S. Senate regarding whether he was going to be confirmed, which ultimately he was not, he said, I'm afraid I'm going to have to decline. Well, when his nomination fell through and he became George W. Bush's senior domestic policy advisor, you know, second only to Karl Rove, I got back in touch with Claude and said, can you do the interview now? And he said, yes, I sure can. And so we went up to the White House and interviewed Claude Allen, and
film. It's good on the film.
Yeah.
You captured that moment. Now, the interesting thing, and this is kind of off the story, but as in making a film over a long period of time, all kinds of things come up where you have to cut things that, you know, you spend a lot of time on because one reason or another, I guess just kind of sadly, leave it on the cutting floor.
Yeah, like outtakes.
Now, afterwards, Claude Allen got in trouble and got, became disgraced, I guess. And how did when all of this started happening, can you share with us how you felt about it and whether you considered leaving him out and how you made the decision to keep him in or whatever was going on? Tell us.
Sure. Yeah, I was certainly sorry to hear what happened with Claude. People may remember he was caught. He would buy something at, for example, a Target and take it home and then go back to the store with the receipt and pick up the same item and go straight to the refund desk, even though the original item he had purchased was back at home. And these were relatively small ticket mm-hmm. items, you know, anywhere from $30 to $400, and it wasn't much in terms of the total amount, which made it unusual. Why would somebody with such a powerful job in the White House do this? But I didn't feel that that was relevant to what I had talked with Claude Allen about, which was his interaction with Jesse Helms in the 1980s and 1990s, and it just, to me, it didn't.
It wasn't a big deal for you.
No, it was a big deal for me because I know and like him personally. It was. I haven't talked to him since. I have not talked to him since the day we interviewed him on camera. I certainly feel for him personally, but in terms of the documentary, it didn't. I wouldn't be truthful if I didn't say it crossed my mind whether we should include it. But then I quickly said, no, this is outstanding. What he's saying is important and has nothing to do with that.
Well, golly, I wish we had time to talk about more about Senator Helms and about the people whom you recruited to talk about him. Maybe we'll just have to watch it on UNC TV to get the whole picture. But let me just say that we're proud of you and what you're doing. And I've got about 15 seconds. Are you just going to live on this success forever, or you've got some other projects that you're working on? Are you open for business still?
I'm going to clean out my office, clean up my office, and clean up my garage, and then play basketball with my children. And then I've done 5 historical documentaries in a row. I'm probably going to do something contemporary dealing with land and water conservation.
Wow.
And the important work of North Carolina's land trusts, which are really, really important. Should be important to everybody.
Well, will you come back and talk about that with us?
Absolutely.
As the project goes on. My guest has been John Wilson, who is the filmmaker whose latest film, Jesse Helms, on UNC TV as we speak. Thanks all y'all for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.